Suzanne Radford with you through to 1 o'clock today. Now, Chef Dima Sharif, she's here in the studio. She joins me. We get the exclusive. She has her new book, Plated Heirlooms, and it's going to be released in the next few weeks here in the UAE. So we get the sneaky preview, if you will. But of course, as always on a Sunday, we like to talk culture, and we're going to be exploring culture through food today and, of course, Palestine. Hello and welcome to the show, Dima.
Thank you for having me. Always excited to be here, but today especially excited because I'm launching something new.
And this is something that has been so close to your heart for such a long time.
Yes, I mean, technically it's been in my head for 3 years. I've been breathing, eating, writing, talking this book for the past 3 years. On the bigger sense, it's part of me, it's my life, it's a very personal book, and yeah.
And here it is, and it's a beautiful book. The writings, the stories, it is a cookbook. There's over 100 recipes from that homeland. Fascinating to explore it from any culture, to look into this space and to look into the food. But of course, it's more than the food. The food is really just the platform to conversation.
Middle Eastern cuisine is now very popular. I think nowadays we're all very familiar with so many cuisines around the world. But the fact that we say Middle Eastern, and because foods are very, very similar and they share the same ingredients, we sometimes we think that they're all identical, but they're not actually, and each one is unique in its own way. I feel that Palestinian cuisine is not very well known, which is the reason why I chose to write about Palestine. Not just it's unknown, it's, to me, if you really want to savor any food, you've got to be personally connected to it. While, for instance, I'm not personally connected to Italy, but I get more connected when I hear people talk about their own stories in Italy, about their food, their grandmothers, and what they shared, their memories. And I thought that this is the way that I should talk about this cuisine that I love so much and eat every day.
Well, the book brings you foods and ingredients you may not be aware of before, but it also brings you some of the foods that are similar to what we might be used to. So you mentioned there Italy, and one of the ingredients we'll be talking about later has a similarity, if you will, to a kind of grain, and that grain you will get in lots of different cultures, from different countries. But for you, for that part of the world, there's a specific name for it, and it has its own heritage, if you like.
Yes, maftoul. I'm bringing maftoul into the conversation because it's just an example of how food travels around the world. Maftoul is basically, technically, it's like making a pasta of sorts. It's exactly the same like the Moroccan couscous, but the difference is couscous is tiny in grains, and then maftoul is like little pearls. And the reason why I want to talk about this is it shows that no matter where we are, no matter what we eat, in the end, we all eat kind of the same thing. It's just every area, inspired by their life and inspired by their cuisine, they come up with what's theirs and what's uniquely their own food.
Well, that's what we're going to explore today, and sharing your thoughts, your stories as well from your homeland, wherever you may be from. Now, you call this book Plated Heirlooms. Why the name?
Because I feel, actually, when I wrote this book and I was thinking about what's the proper name, it was only right to call it Plated Heirlooms because to me, heirlooms are the most prized possessions. I kind of thought of it this way. I mean, we call a locket that has a picture an heirloom, and say if my great-grandmother had passed on a locket to me, I will really appreciate it because I know that that locket is a reminder of her. I'll see her face in it, and then I'll always know that this is part of me. I felt that what makes an heirloom is continuity. And then to me, when you prize something, you want it to continue. And I felt that the locket will only show me a face, but this shows me my life. This shows me where I'm from. This shows me the people, the roots that I come from. And I felt that this is really my heirloom. And this is, and I wanted in a way to let people notice that their cuisine, their food, and what we take for granted, something that we have every single day, is actually an heirloom, and it's a continuity.
How beautiful. Well, we're asking you this morning for your heirloom, something in your family, that's something that you cherish, something personal to you, whether it's been handed down through your family or passed to you in some way, whatever it may be. It could be a metaphor for something special in your life, those memories of family or places. It could be an item, an object. It could be jewellery, an ornament, even furniture. Heirlooms, furniture are passed through families and generations. So what do you have that's dear to you? What's the heirloom you'd like to share with us this morning? Let us know on 4001, and we are going to be drawing at the end of the show. You could win this beautiful book that Dima has created over the last few years, and this is getting it, you know, just as it goes, hot off the press. So Plated Heirlooms by Dima Sharif is our prize, but we're also giving away, which is also very special, the Organic Muna Essentials. Tell us about these.
So basically in this book, and as I researched Palestinian cuisine, I came to learn that Mune, which stands for pantry, so the section that is concerned with preparing food for storage, is really the essence of the philosophy of Palestinian cuisine. When you do research about cuisine is not like saying I'm researching a recipe, because cuisine, whether I like the recipe or not, whether I think it's technically sound or not as a chef or even as a home cook, this is besides the point. Cuisine is what people eat, dictated by what their land is giving them, and in a way shaped by the culture, by their life and circumstances that are around them. So, for instance, storage, life back then, because in this book I talk about an era, not the present, but not somewhere in the ancient past. I'm talking about a previous era where people had to store food because they ate seasonal, because food was not available. And in researching that section, which eventually became the biggest section in the book, it's over 180 pages of one chapter, and realizing that it's the essence, I felt that I've always been thinking of a product that I can put out there that has my personal stamp on it. And I felt, you know, this is it. This is where it is, because it sums the philosophy. And so
you're including your special olive oil and za'atar. And we're going to find out more about the olive oil and za'atar. And olives are so significant to this region of Palestine and all the surrounding area. But we'll explore that more as well. Messages coming in already with people's special items or gifts or memories, those mementos that you've had handed down to you that are your heirlooms. Keep them coming in. And also our prize today, the book and the Organic Muna Essentials, we're going to be giving those away as our prize for the Sunday quiz as well, which is happening just after midday. The theme today, our questions are all around family, so keeping it in the family. Stay with us. Beautiful book, Plated Heirlooms by Dima Al-Sharif. She joins me here in the studio as we flick through these beautiful pages, stories, recipes, showing and really taking you on a journey through the generations of Palestinian cooking. Also, if you have an heirloom, something special to you in your family, let us know about it. Now, Dima, the idea of the heirloom, which I can absolutely see, these stories and food and the research that you've done from your culture. But having said that, when I'm looking at the cover of the book and I'm seeing plates and I'm seeing writing on the plates, tell me about this and this tradition.
It's not a tradition. It's something I had custom made for me for the book, actually, because I wanted every picture in the book was meant to reflect what I'm saying in terms of story and culture. And I wanted even the things that I could not say, which when I eat a specific food will come to mind, I wanted my readers to see what comes to my mind when I eat this food. So I kind of put poetry lines on the plates. Also, I felt that if I'm talking about cuisine, again, I'll go back to the thing of cuisine, because that's where the essence of all of this is. Cuisine is reflective of every aspect of any people's life, because cuisine talks about the weather, the season, the what they have available in terms of technology. It talks about the culture, the lifestyle that affects that, which you will see very clearly in the book. For me to sum up this huge, huge project and huge amount of thoughts into a cover, I wanted to put everything that reflects everything I'm saying in there. So there's the literature, and from there you will see also the covers of some Palestinian writers' books. And then you'll see the olive oil, which is, the cuisine is based on the love for land, olive trees, and what we think of as the most prized possession, the olives. So the oil, and then the poetry that makes up the literature, which makes up the thoughts and the collective thought of the people of the land. And then I also wanted to use very old, like for instance, that basket is from my great-grandma. And that basket is a very traditional basket that they used to serve breakfast on. And then also there is this locket, which also belonged to my grandmother. And it's like a very old silver necklace. So I wanted to put like everything that I was trying to say. And then in the middle there's za'atar, because za'atar and olive oil are the staple ingredients in Palestinian cuisine. We appreciate them and we feel that they are the base without which there is no cuisine.
So we're listening there to the musician, Lebanese composer, actually singer and oud player. Tell us about this artist, but really as he is taking us to the poetry, to my mother, Mohamed Darwish.
This is our beloved Marcel Khalife. Marcel Khalife is a Lebanese musician, but he's someone who sung for Palestine repeatedly. And the thing that I love the most about him is he sung for Mahmoud Darwish, who to me is an inspiration. I've quoted Mahmoud Darwish and many other Palestinian writers and poets in the book, but Mahmoud Darwish specifically, sorry, because I felt Mahmoud Darwish captures the essence of this culture, captures the essence of this passion that people have for a piece of land in the end, captures the essence of why it is important to hold on to some of the things that are really great. And in the book you will see as I use it and explain, one of his most amazing poems is To My Mother, which a lot of people know very well. And that poem, he's talking about a time when he was young and when he was in the comfort and a safety of his own mother. And he's talking about how he now misses her bread and misses her coffee and misses the aromas of that home. And in so many ways, as I would explain in the book, and you'll see, Mahmoud Darwish also kind of symbolized Palestine as the mother of all Palestinians. And so Palestine is Mahmoud Darwish's mother, and this is where the poem's coming from.
Tell me about your mother.
Ah, my mother, oh my gosh. How can anyone say enough about their own mothers? I mean, my mom, I owe her everything. I owe her what I know. She's single-handedly responsible for this book, not because she told me write a book, but because she insisted I should learn to cook. I, at some point, refused to learn to cook, and because at that time I felt that cooking was for women who wanted to stay at home, and I was career-oriented, and I was not interested. With that said, I always ate good food, and I was an eater. I still am. So enjoyed the food, provided I didn't have to cook it. But my mom insisted to teach me, and no matter how many times I told her that's not for me and I'm not going to do it, she never gave up. And then she, one day when I had my first son, she came to visit me. I had him in Bahrain. And she brought with her a suitcase. She never told me, actually, until right before she left. She said, I brought a suitcase, and that suitcase has every single recipe that I own, every single recipe that you ever ate, and some of them handwritten, some of them photocopied. She's actually also put them in a folder and kind of separated them into sections like appetizers, soups, and stuff like that. Look, I get like emotional when I'm talking about this. And then she left. And, you know, I told her, look, Mom, I'm not going to do it, but thank you, you know. I never looked into the suitcase. One day my son was sleeping and my friends were working and I had that year off because I just had a child. And then I went through that suitcase and...
Take a moment. But it was a pivotal moment in your time in your life, because as you said, you know, before that you had been around food, you loved food, it was part of your sort of family business, your parents and grandparents, growing up in Jordan, your third generation living there in the diaspora. And but you went on to work in Jordan, you know, you were working with the UN, you were working in social development. And when you and your husband went in Bahrain, realized that that's not so much work there for you to do, and you're having your children, the food came back into your mind,
because,
into the forefront for you.
My son was sleeping that day and I realized 4 hours later, and I know the time because my son would nap for 4 hours between feeds. And 4 hours later, I realized I had cried, I had laughed, I had remembered things that I no way would have remembered on my own. And at that point, at that moment, I felt food is way more than just the flavors, although that's the only thing I appreciated before. Food is a connection. And food is something that sticks to our memories. It brings back things and it puts things in perspective. And I felt at that point, people should know about this. They should know that in the end, we're talking about a cup of rice, two handfuls of this, two spoons of sugar. We're talking about ingredients. And to provoke that kind of emotion, I felt like this is something that people should know about. And since then, my life changed. I started telling people about this in the book, on the blog, and everything that I write. I try to tell people that food is a connection. It's more than just tasting something.
We're going to find out more about what's in the book, Plated Heirlooms, the story of Palestine through food, with Chef Dima Sharif, and share your messages. Lots coming in, sharing your heirlooms, whatever's special to you in your family that's been handed down to you. Keep those messages coming in. When we come back, I'm going to be sharing them with you. Stay with us. Talking to Dima Sharif today, Chef Dima Sharif, as we celebrate the publication of her book, Plated Heirlooms, telling stories through food and taking us into the culture of Palestine. It's a real pleasure to have Dima Sharif with us. And as many people are texting in, do keep those messages coming in with your heirlooms. What do you have in your family that's special to you, that's been passed down through the generations? And we'll share your story. We're going to be sharing many of them throughout the morning and into the afternoon. And you could win. We're going to be pulling a winner just before 1 o'clock, a copy of the book, Plated Heirlooms, along with the beautiful olive oil from Jordan, and what Dima has explained is the Muna essential, so the za'atar and the olive oil. Now we're going to get deep into olive oil and olives, because it's so significant to your story and through the stories of your book. Just to let you know of some of the messages coming in, we've got here, I know Dima and her wonderful passion for food. I'm so happy for her that she's having her first book published. Congratulations. And that's from Ella.
Oh, how sweet. Thank you, Ella. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I mean, I have to say thank you really for everybody who's supported this and who's actually helped me get this out here today. Because in the end, I'm talking about a whole country's cuisine. I cannot have all the credit for all of this. I mean, I wrote it, yes, and I've put them together, I've done the research. But without the country of people really that helped me by gathering information and by cross-checking that information, I wanted this book to be accurate. I didn't want to just write a collection of recipes here and there. I wanted to explain a cuisine that has not been classified before. And I wanted to show...
That's important to know, that's not been classified before.
No, it hasn't been. And even in terms of what sauces and what dressings and what seasonings, what spices are the common. So this work has not been done before, and I could not have done it on my own. I had to check with people, and because Palestine itself has many regions, so I had to check with people and families and cross-reference for every region to actually classify the cuisine and make sure that the information is accurate. And because people have been on the move in Palestine, a lot of people don't live where they originated. So also finding this information was kind of very challenging, because People who were in a specific area are now in another area, and foods are being said that they originated there when tracing them back. If you read the book, you will see where the food originated.
And we'll be talking about that. So you can give us some examples. Give us some examples, Dima, of that.
Like, for instance, there is Romania, which I have always thought of as a Ghazan specialty, like a specialty from Gaza. Only to find out that it actually originated in Jaffa, but because people were displaced in Jaffa, and some of them had ended up in Gaza, and those people in Gaza kept on cooking the food that they know and the food that they grew up eating. Many decades later, this food became synonymous with Gaza. You'd ask a lot of Palestinian people, to date, they think it's a Gazan specialty. But then this is where my journey was very interesting, because I myself found out a lot about the history of food and the history of the different plates, and found out a lot about where I come from, which a lot of it I've known already, but then the details of life and the details of people, this made it all the more relative and made me more connected.
So growing up in Jordan, whereabouts in Jordan?
In Amman.
In Amman, okay. So third generation. So with your parents, grandparents, what were you eating from the homeland, and how close to it was that food, do you think?
I think I was pretty close. There was still movement back and forth, right? So a lot of our food would actually come from inside Palestine, like olive oil, for instance. Until today, I still get my olive oil from Palestine, and it's like the family's share. And when you read the book and the section about olive oil, you will see how why it's important, the harvest, and how then it is divided and given to the family. Like, for instance, the za'atar, because in a way everybody seems to believe that the za'atar is not the same. So the one that comes from Palestine, although maybe the za'atar as a plant is exactly the same, but then in every area it comes up with different aromas, which actually is true, because come to think of it, za'atar, oregano, thyme are all the same, but because they are indigenous to different areas, they come with a different flavor and a little bit difference in the shape.
What would be a standard dish in your household growing up?
Msakhan is definitely, because msakhan is the national dish of Palestine. Ma'loubet Betinjan is something that we always have. Stuffed Ma'loubet Betinjan is an upside down of rice and eggplants. I say the names because, you know, to me this is what it's called, and in the book I've made it a point to use the Arabic names for two reasons. I wanted everybody who reads this to know the names, because if you go to a restaurant, for instance, it will be called by its original name.
So it's an upside down rice and eggplant dish.
Yeah, so ma'loube in general is an upside down dish where you cook all ingredients in one pot. It has rice, meat and vegetables, any sort, any combination. And then you flip it upside down when it's done and you serve it as a cake. That's traditional way to serve it. And then, for instance, stuffed vegetables, wara aynabu kusa is stuffed kusa and rolled vine leaves. For instance, the Lebanese will have it as an appetizer cold, but we have it as a main course hot. And the actual carrying out of the recipe is different, although both have the same name. So this is also another thing that I wanted to show, is because we share, because in Middle Eastern cuisine you share a lot of the food. They could either come in the same names but actually be technically different, or they can come with different names but technically they're done the same. And that's how every country has its unique cuisine.
So there would be dishes you would be eating growing up, and your family were connected to the land. As you mentioned there, you have, you know, the olives and the groves in Palestine. But growing up in Jordan, what were your family doing there?
My grandfather was actually the first one to start man-made farms in Jordan. So he was basically the first person to have a farm in Jordan, and they were organic farms, which back then you never called them organic, but back then the difference was he always thought that the use of whatever chemicals that were becoming in at the moment were actually dangerous, because he felt, I wouldn't drink that, so why would I put it in my food? And he decided to follow old traditional methods of farming, And the farm was really where I spent a lot of my childhood. We did not live on the farm, but then every weekend, every vacation, we were very involved, you know. I even remember there were times where I had to go and pick some oranges myself, because my dad felt that you have to learn the value of the thing that you have, and you won't learn it unless you experience it. And I until today, love being in the presence of trees and nature, and I talk about it on my blog because I feel that it takes me to that time.
And it is about being taken to that time, whether it's in your life or in your family's life. And that's about this idea of connection. Food can connect us. Conversation can connect us. And you are connecting us this morning with your messages coming through. Just to share some of them with you on here. I love hearing Dima's heritage and her stories. Romane is a recipe my mother-in-law enjoys making. And can't wait to get my hands on the book and to share with my children. Somebody else saying, when it comes to heirlooms, I have a samovar from Russia passed down through my family from 1856. Now the will state that it must never leave the family. That's from Louise. How amazing is that?
I mean, she said something now that I find very significant. I want to share this with my children. And one of the reasons why I wrote this book, and honestly you'll see it in the dedication, I want to share it with my children. And I want to share with them something that is beautiful, that's about love. And I want to teach them the real meaning of love, because the real meaning of love goes beyond just our relationship with things around us. It's our relationship with ourselves. And we've got to come to terms with how we feel about our own self and where we come from, our roots, and what we are in the end.
Now, you have your stall every week at the farmer's market on the terrace, and I met your son on Friday, and he's very proud of you and very excited about the book, which is amazing. As you said, this is something for them, you know, you're handing and passing on to them. But, you know, how long have you been in the UAE, in Dubai?
Over 10 years.
Okay, so your children are pretty much grown here.
Yes.
How old's your son?
My son is 12.
Yeah. So how connected are they to Palestine?
They're very, very, very connected. Okay, so they know the food, they eat the food, and of course you will see again in the book that I say that on the table over our food from our country is mostly and unwittingly the time when I tell them about who we are, about who they are, and how, where we come from, and the stories that I have learned. Because you see, it's not just about feeding someone where they're from. Every mother wants to teach her children wisdom, and the only means to do this is to tell them stories. And I find that I learned, I call it life wisdom maybe, from my grandmother and her stories and what she used to tell me, then what my mother told me. And when I want to tell them, for instance, you've got to study. I'm not going to go say you've got to study, you know, but I'd say it is important for you to study. Imagine if you were the first Palestinian, for instance, to have invented something. So stuff like this, I think, are very important. And my son and my daughter, they're funny because they kept on asking me, especially the last 6 months, because the book was supposed to be released in fall, but we had to be delayed. They were always asking me, where is it? When is it coming? Because I need to take it to school and tell the teacher that now we can actually start studying my mother's book.
How lovely. Yeah, really.
So, yeah. You know, I mean, in a way, my children are connected to the culture, connected to the thought process, connected to the root. I am a firm believer in you've got to know your roots to actually shoot up, to actually go places, be connected. So I connect them and ground them that way. But then I also like to show them the world, because in the end, they've got to understand that we are all the same, although we love saying I'm from here and I'm from there, but we're all people in the end.
So inspiring stories from Chef Dima Sharif. And you know what? We're looking for inspiration from you as well. Now, Rebecca Davison, a dear colleague and friend here at Dubai Eye, was tragically killed in a boating accident back in 2013. We remember her and Mark and celebrate her life all the time, but every year as we're coming up to the anniversary. Now, the Standard Chartered Dubai Marathon is happening in a couple of weeks' time, and there will be the Run for Rebecca team. But as part of our commemoration to Rebecca and her inspiration inspiration as a person. We have five pillars that we really associate with Rebecca: positivity, courage, determination, strength, and personality. So do you know someone in your community? It could be you, it could be a family member, it could be a friend, a work colleague who is inspiration, an inspiration to you, or inspirational. We're looking for that special someone with similar traits to help others. Maybe they're helping others at the moment, maybe they're helping somebody sick, or they help in the community. Maybe they're somebody who they've overcome a personal challenge this year, or maybe they just show amazing character. We want to know about them. We want you to nominate that inspiration person in our community so we can award them the Rebecca Davidson Award. We're also giving away a voucher to Talese Fitness so they get to have a pampering day there. So if you know that certain someone, then just text in Rebecca to 4001 and we'll give you a call back and get all the details. You can also go to our website, dubaieye1038.com, and there on the homepage in the feature box you can actually write directly to us and nominate that special person. Now, Dima, we're talking about your book, of course, and we're going to be sharing more and more messages throughout the show with regards to the listeners that are texting in with their stories of family heirlooms. But very much a part of this book is a cookbook, of course, along with the stories and the culture of Palestine. But as you've already touched on, I want to know more about olives and the significance of olives and how those olives are really pressed and processed into the jars of olive oil.
Olive oil, the olive tree is one of Palestine's most important trees, both culturally and also agriculturally. It's believed to be like most of the land allocated for agriculture actually produces olive trees. The olive tree is ancient in Palestine, and you can see that even in biblical references. And there's a whole mountain that in ancient time was named the Mount of Olives. And so basically it is believed, even archaeologically, that it actually is one of the first trees on that land. To people culturally, the olive tree is a tree that is very deeply rooted, and it's a tree that continues to generate. So basically a small shoot or a branch from the olive tree will create another tree. So people love the olive tree, and it symbolizes to them the land, the actual physical land. And also it is the food, because even when life was tough, like say there was a drought or there was any condition that made life difficult, people relied on the olive tree for their food, for their heat, for their light, for the oil and the actual fruit. And then, like I said, mixed with a little bit of za'atar and some bread, it makes a full meal. So to them, it kind of sums up their survival. It sums up their roots. And the olive tree, there's something really nice about it, is every Palestinian, when we have children, we plant olive trees and name them after the children. And usually in the family's land or by the home, and sometimes even in the garden. And it is very common to find in Palestinian homes that people have trees with names dating back to great-great-grandparents and the new children. And I just love that. I find it's really nice. The production of olive oil is to me fascinating, because the production of olive oil starts with, actually, the trees in Palestine are tended by hand, and they are following very old traditional farming methods. And then even the olives are picked by hand. And it is known in Palestine that the olive harvest season is spectacular, because everybody gets together and everybody goes out to collect olives and help the family. And you'll find it's like a communal work altogether, where everybody's getting together and it's like a picnic, and people are saying poems, and they're actually doing even poem verse competitions, and the children are running around, little supervision. So it's kind of like a week or a couple of weeks of fun activity for everyone. And then once the olives are picked, they go for pressing straight after the picking. And what makes Palestinian olive oil very special is it's unrefined oil, and it does not really go through the mechanized process of refining and making it anything more special than it really, really is, as it's meant to be. So basically it is pressed and put in the bottles, and shipped to everyone, and families usually share with the rest of their family their share.
You have the beautiful olive oil that you sell at the farmers market on the terrace every Friday. You can get it there. We're also, it's part of our prize today, along with the book Plated Heirlooms by Dima Sharif, we're giving away today with your stories. Keep them coming in of heirlooms in your family, something that's been passed down that's dear to you. Let us know on 4001. But let's go to the phone lines now. We've got Ava on the phone. Hi Ava, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Suzanne. Good morning, Dima. How are you doing?
Really excited.
It's great to hear your voice there, Ava. Tell us your story. You shared with us today, you texted in regarding something special that's been passed down to you and your family.
Sure. So this is actually a kebab recipe from my husband's aunt. And she was a woman of... real sort of internal power, a lot of strength, one of those people who you kind of hold as a role model for times to come. And unfortunately, I think the last 3 years were very, very difficult for her, and we lost her about a month ago. And on my last trip to Lucknow, which is where she stayed, she was on her bed, and it was very difficult for me, but I really did want this recipe because I knew that that was what, you know, my husband remembered of her. She was sort of like his mom, and it was really important to me that that was sort of going to be that continuing memory of her and something I could use to rekindle, you know, her the flavors of her kitchen. And even though she couldn't prepare it for us, she actually directed her husband to make the same kebabs for us, and she sat down and gave me the recipe down to the last spice. And I don't think I would ever be able to recreate the same flavor, but just even having that recipe close at heart, knowing that one day I'm going to find the courage to make it, it's just something that's very powerful and very dear to me.
Thank you so much, Ava, for sharing that story today. It is very personal, and it is something, and it just highlights that connectivity again to food.
And continuity of something, of someone, of a thought, of something we prize so much. And I'm sorry to hear that, Ava, but thank you for sharing. That's really heartwarming.
For sure. And Ava, just for people to know, your details, you know, as you're blogging and connecting with people as well about food in our community, let us know.
Absolutely. I am blogging at, I live in a frying pan. I run a company called Frying Pan Adventures, and we're essentially a device for student tourism company. And on Instagram, we're at Frying Pan Adventures, so you can sort of see our stories. We do a lot of food of nostalgia, food with memories, food of culture, which is why what Dima does resonates very, very closely with us.
Thanks so much for your call today, Ava. Have a good day. Take care.
You too. It's my pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Keep your stories coming in on 4001, whether it be through food, the recipes that have been handed down to you through your family, or whether it's any kind of heirloom, whether it comes to furniture or ornaments, it may be jewellery, it could be photographs, it may be something spoken, I don't know, that has been handed down through the family. Let us know on 4001. And you'll go into the draw. We're going to be picking a winner out just before 1 o'clock today, doing this beautiful copy of Dima Sharif's book. It's her first book. It's hot off the press. We're the first people to talk about it in the world, as it will be on the shelves in the next few weeks. But you will be able to pick up and buy a copy from Dima at the farmers market on the terrace from in a couple of weeks' time.
Yes, not this Friday, the Friday after.
Afterwards. So I'm looking at the book here as we speak. We've posted up some pictures as well to give you a preview. Check out the Facebook page, dubaieye1038.com/Dubai Today is where our blog post is today to find out more, and more stories to come, and the Sunday quiz, so stay with me. And Dima Al-Sharif is my special guest today with her publication, her first book, A Real Labour of Love. It's taken 3 years to complete, really telling stories of Palestine through food, and it's a passion, the food, and of course of her homeland. 4001 is that text number if you've got any questions for Dima today when it comes to food, recipes, ingredients, but also if you'd like to share your family heirloom, if there's something that you've had passed down to you through your family, let us know. We are saying Palestine, but you mention and talk a lot in the book of Palestine.
Yeah, in the book, actually, you won't see the word Palestine. I use the word Palestine. The reason being, number one, it's historical accuracy, because the English translation Palestine is new, but Palestine existed, and Palestine existed since forever. I do go into the name and where it originated, and Palestine is colloquial for the classic Arabic word Philistine, which is what the country is known for. Also because when I say Palestine, these days it resonates as a different area than what I'm referring to. I am referring to the area that is north by the Mediterranean and south by the Red Sea. On the east, it's by the River Jordan, northeast Lebanon and Syria, and on the west, it's Egypt. I am not just referring to what is now known in the news as Palestine. So, and because this book talks about an era before Palestine, it talks about the era of Palestine, so it is only right and accurate to refer to it with the right name.
We're going to be looking at, so we've already talked about the olives being so significant to this part of the world, but we're also going to be looking at breads. Now, bread across the globe, but what's special, and also the etiquette and ceremony around some of the breads and some of those traditions within your culture. So lots to talk about today. Keep your messages coming in on 4001 when it comes to your heirlooms, what you've had passed down to you in your families. And also here, Abby is texting to say, I feel that there is a part of Dima's soul in this book.
Yeah. I mean, the book is, in a way, yes, it's a cookbook. So it's a there is a technical manual of instructions to cook food, and it explains cuisine. But then my soul is in it because it's also kind of a semi-autobiography. It talks about my life and stuff that happened in my childhood and funny stories here and there. And it talks about my mother's life. It talks about my grandmother's lives. Because I felt that if I'm going to talk about a cuisine and about a whole country, I've got to represent those stories, the cultural stories, with real-life events. Just to show people that they're not just theories, they actually are part of our life, some of which are very, very funny. Other ones are more serious, just to elaborate on the cultural aspects that I'm trying to explore.
And one of the most common sort of foods, dishes from the Middle East, people will talk about hummus. And I know that's going to mean lots of different things. I mean, in essence, it's the same ingredients, but hummus from your part of the world.
Okay, so we do prepare in Palestine the same hummus that the whole of the Middle East prepares, which is basically chickpeas and tahina with a little bit of lemon, along with salt. And but the one that I find the most interesting, and hummus is included, is utsiya. Utsiya basically is, you know, all of this has become known as the street food of Palestine, although it's also eaten at home. But because when you are there and you're visiting the old souks, the open markets, you'll find that you're eating this food there. Utsiya is the specialty of Jerusalem. Jerusalem in Arabic, classical Arabic, is Al-Quds, but in colloquial Arabic is Al-Uds. And when we say the word utsiya, it means from Jerusalem. So in Jerusalem, they actually have a specialty dish where they mix the two staple hummus and ful together. And the plate, when it's served, you'll see parts that are brown because of the ful and parts that are white because of the hummus. And all three recipes are included, as well as falafel and all of the street food that people have come to love and appreciate.
So what about the breads then? Now, there's a whole story. I mean, obviously bread, there's lots of different kinds of breads, but the ceremony that goes with certain kinds of bread.
So while I did include varieties of bread, including the sesame kaak, which kaak psimsim, one of the specialties of Jerusalem as well. But the one iconic bread that I wanted to focus on is taboon bread, because taboon bread is unique to Palestine. And while most people think that taboon bread is in reference to the name of the bread, it actually is in reference to the name of the oven it was baked in. Because taboon is the oven, the homemade oven that this kind of bread was baked in. It is the bread that comes with, what do we call them, like air pockets. And it's very iconic, and it's used in the national dish, msakhan. The interesting thing about taboon is back in the day when a woman got married, all the women in the villages will get together And they, together with the new bride, will build an oven from clay, from mud, and from tree branches and stuff like that. And that oven was called a tabun. And the reason why they did it is because they felt that they wanted to give her what her life needs now in order for her to show love and support to her family. So basically, tabun is that oven that the women created together, in which all the food of that family will be cooked, including the bread. With time, the name tabun became the name of that bread. So I wanted, as well in the book, to bring some stories like this into perspective and share how food started and where the names came from.
And does it still happen today, that kind of tradition and ceremony?
Very rarely, I'd say, because it was a specialty of the villages as well. A lot of people still continue doing that, but it's not as before. If people didn't do that, people didn't eat. Now, you know, with technology, and we now buy the ovens that are ready and we just place them in the kitchen, I just find I find it more romantic the way people got together and communally did things to support one another, and I wanted to explore that.
What about matchmaking?
Matchmaking.
Through food.
I mean, I don't know. Like, a lot of people were married, arranged marriages. And these women, the same women, would actually get together years later to decide who should marry into, you know, who should marry who, which families. And yes, whenever women sit together, matchmaking is number one on their list of discussion. And you know what? I joke with my children, although they're very young to understand, but I joke with them because I want them to understand that we are now privileged and have moved on from so many things, but then also to connect. Like I tell my daughter, don't think that you can fall in love, you know, because I have to approve and I have to know who your husband's going to be. At first she'd look at me and then I'd tell her, did you know that your grandmother actually had to marry that way? Imagine marrying someone that you didn't even know. It's kind of nice also to see how the new generation looks at this kind of, you know, relationships.
More about relationships when we come back, and sharing your messages. Good morning, good afternoon to Sally. My maternal grandmother put together a collection of her favourite recipes collected throughout her life, both family recipes, local recipes, and those collected on her travels. She illustrated it and made copies for her daughters and granddaughters, and I still use it. She died in 1990 and it holds such special memories.
I agree. I mean, look, to me, and I don't know, I feel this way. I feel that recipes is really the most prized thing that we can have. It's an insight into a time, into a people. It's an insight into someone that we like. And like I just told you, you know, through recipes, I connected with my mother and understood her need to teach me this, because it was beyond teaching me the technique. So I totally relate to what Sally is saying.
What about the guys? What about the men?
The men are also involved. Traditionally, they are more involved in the barbecue section of the cuisine. Like a lot of men would not just cook the traditional food that's done every day. Although I have to say that in most Palestinian families, every man is known for a specialty. So even if it's like a traditional food that's made at home, it becomes known that he's the one who prepares that dish. So even his wife or his mother, his sisters, would not actually make that dish. And every time they craved it or wanted to have it, they always had him prepare it and kept it for special occasions. And that's why, to different families, different foods represent what a special occasion is.
So what's that food for you in your family that really marks a special occasion? Let us know your thoughts, along with the heirlooms. If you have an heirloom that's been handed down through your family, let us know about that as well. And we'll return in a few moments to our conversation when it comes to creativity, when it comes to culture, and when it comes to food, as we are in conversation with Chef Dima Al-Sharif, with her new book coming out here in the UAE and across the globe, which are those beautiful illustrations and recipes and stories of her homeland. And that is Palestine. So we'll be sharing more on the book Plated Heirlooms in just a few moments. And thanks for all your messages coming in, sharing your stories as well of family heirlooms or special mementos that have been passed down through your families, including two ladies that we have on the line. So it is time for, have you missed it?
It's the Sunday Quiz, only on Dubai Today. on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And our two contestants on the line today, we have Anne and Louise. Good afternoon to you, ladies.
Hello.
Hello there. Hi there. Now, Louise, we've already shared your message this morning about the samovar that's in your family.
Yes.
How wonderful. What was it? It dates back to the 1800s, is that right?
Yeah, it's just something from my mother's side of the family, and her mother wrote in the will that we must never get rid of it, basically. Ooh. As well as there's also a copper kettle as well.
A copper kettle as well?
Yeah, which my brother has. I have the samovar.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And also, Anne, you texted about something very special that's been handed down in your family. Tell me about that.
It's our dining room furniture, and it's a big, big black table with sort of that black mahogany with, you know, those big nails in it, or I don't know if you call them nails, and a rocking chair to go with it. And I used to rock in the rocking chair when I was four. My mother used to rock in the rocking chair when she was four, and now my daughter's been rocking in the rocking chair when she's four. And I used to play under this dining room table thinking it was ginormous, it was for giants, but actually it's not that big, but it's solid.
How fabulous, ladies. You're really lucky to have such things that carry such stories. And in fact, when I was home recently back in the UK with my mother, she asked me if I would like the dining room table, which was her grandmother's. So I said, yes, of course. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to, where I'm going to put it, but definitely don't let it go. I will find a space for it. So ladies, good sports. You're up for the Sunday quiz today, and rather apt. Our theme today is keep it in the family. So all the questions will be linked to that theme. We've got Judge Joe here in the wings. She's going to be scoring. Good afternoon to you, Joe.
Good afternoon, ladies.
And she's got a fine raft of questions that she's prepared for you. Now, listen to the questions carefully. I'm going to be giving you three questions each. We're going to alternate, and the person at the end with the most points that answered correctly is the winner. And if by chance you are at a tie break, then we will go to a tiebreaker round. Now, Anne and Louise, you've got 4 seconds to answer the question. There will be a timer. So Anne and Louise, are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Now, Anne, you're going to be first. You're going to be getting the question first. So stand by as we prepare for...
It's the Sunday Quiz, only on Dubai Today, on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Okay, Anne, so here's your first question. What is the name of the chart that represents family relationships and usually represents the oldest generations at the top of the chart and the newer generations at the bottom?
It's the family tree, but there's another name for it, isn't there? I can't remember right now. I can't remember.
It's okay. Family tree is what's here as our answer. So you are okay. Indeed correct. Well done. Okay. Okay, so we're going now to Louise, and here's your question.
Thank you.
Heirloom seeds are seeds that have been handed down from generation to generation in order to preserve the variety from a particular area, location, or region. The Alpha Pink heirloom seed is a variety of what type of fruit?
Oh, I'm really sorry. I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
It is the tomato. Okay, so Anne, here's your next question. Elizabeth Taylor was married 8 times, most famously twice to Richard Burton. He gave her an engagement ring that was valued at nearly $9 million. How many carats did it have? Now, we've got a multiple choice here. So was it A, 33.19 carats, B, 11.19 carats, or C, 22.19 carats?
I'm going to go for 22.19,
B. It was in fact A, and 33.19 carats. That's a lot of carats.
I didn't know you'd get diamonds that big. That's why I didn't show you.
I know, incredible. Okay, so Louise, here's your second question. Parents Michelle Duggar and Jim Bob Duggar have been married for 27 years and are officially one of the world's largest families. How many children have they had together? Was it A, they have 20 children, B, they have 19 children, or C, they have 24 children?
I'll go for 19.
They have, in fact, 20 children. Wow, they've been busy, haven't they? Okay, so Anne, here's your next question. Kirk Douglas, patriarch of acting dynasty the Douglas family, and father Michael Douglas, recently celebrated which birthday?
Oh, 60?
The 99th birthday. Kirk Douglas celebrated his 99th birthday on the 9th of December 2015. How incredible. Okay, so here's your question, Louise. The backstabbing soapy American TV drama of the 1980s that was called Dallas, it was the saga of the Ewing family and its massive oil empire. What's the name of the eldest son and CEO of Ewing Oil?
J.R. Ewing.
You are correct. It was indeed J.R. Ewing. So let's go to the scores, Judge Joe.
It is actually 1-1, so you're going to go to a tiebreaker, Suzanne.
Okay, tiebreaker round, Anne and Louise. So I'm going to ask you one tiebreaker decider question, and the person who guesses closest to the answer today is the winner of the Sunday quiz. So here you go. Listen carefully and... The Antiques Roadshow is a BBC TV programme about heirlooms. One of the most precious heirloom collections discovered on the show was owned by Jinx Taylor, who inherited her father's jade collection. To the closest amount in US dollars, what's the value of the collection? Let's go to you first, Anne. What's your number?
2.5.
And to you, Louise, what's your answer?
30 million.
Okay, so the answer is $1.7 million. Joe, who's our winner?
Anne is this afternoon's winner of the Sunday quiz. Congratulations.
Yay! Congratulations. Anne, well done. And you get a copy of Dima Sharif's book, this beautiful book, Plated Heirlooms, along with the olive oil and the za'atar, part of that beautiful combination, the essentials, organic Muna, part of the pantry. So congratulations, that goes to you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to that.
And because both of you text in with such beautiful stories about your heirlooms, we're also giving the other prize as well to you. So the two ladies, Anne and Louise, both get a copy of the book, Plated Heirlooms, along with the olive oil and the za'atar. So congratulations. Oh,
thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much. And stay tuned and have a great day.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Lovely. Well, two happy ladies there. Excellent. And I don't blame them considering what they've just won. But
the
good sports.
Were difficult.
Yeah. Well, Judge, she's a tough one. Yeah, but she makes it hard. But, you know, if you want to take part in the Sunday quiz next week, then just text in quiz now to 40001.
And it is about having a bit of fun.
We love it. We absolutely love it. So if you want to take part next week, 40001 with your name. So when we come back, we're going to be sharing more stories from Dima Sharif's book Plated Heirlooms. We're exploring some of those recipes, and there's more recipes to come. 100 recipies, Dima?
It's over 280 recipes.
280?
Over.
Wow, yeah. You have been busy in the last 3 years.
Oh yeah. Look, it's funny because when I first started, I never thought it was such a big project. Because, you know, we take things for granted. We think, oh, I know this, and I eat it every day. I cook it every day, and it's what I talk about all the time. And I write. I write on my blog. I write on online publications, and I write continuously. I never thought this was going to be as challenging as it turned out. The whole process was challenging for me. But you know what? What I love the most about this book, besides the fact that I can see it in front of me right now, which at some point seemed like a dream, is the growth, because in the end it's a journey, and I try to take my readers on that journey. It's a very personal journey that I am exploring a lot of personal space with everybody who's going to read this. And the journey for me also was a lot of growth. So if... You know, I wouldn't have hoped for anything else.
So we're going to be sharing some of those recipes and more of those stories when we come back. And keep your stories of heirlooms, recipes, whatever it may be that's been handed down to you through your family, from your culture, then do let us know on 4001. Also, if you care about the welfare of your children, then you might consider attending the Child Protection Seminar on Monday the 18th from 4:30 till 8 o'clock. It's happening at Knowledge Village. The Child Protection Seminars are being held for teachers, coaches and for the community. You can check out online austability.com, austability.com. So Austability Child Protection Seminars, and we're giving away two tickets to the seminar on January the 18th. So if this is something you're interested in, and if you're a parent, then you should certainly be considering how protected your child is, whether it's online, whether it's cyber or not. Then all you need to do is text in Austability to 4001 and you could get your hands on these two tickets. Stay with me. In conversation today with Chef Dima Al-Sharif as she releases her book Plated Heirlooms, stories of food, culture and of course those origins, the heritage coming from Palestine. And it's a real pleasure to have Dima with us, and we're listening there to some folklore dance music. It's the old kind of dance music, right?
I'm laughing because it's all about poetry in the end, right? And then many people come up with many twists on what music or tempo to go with. So the original one would be only vocal. The same words, vocal, and more, I'd say, like slower, like more mellow. And this is one of those songs, like, for instance, that they would sing even in weddings or in the parties in prep for weddings, because those parties is like when the families get together and they're kind of saying farewell, not necessarily farewell, like people are moving out of the house and some people will move and live in other countries and stuff. So my grandmother actually sang this song for me. And at that time, I was not into, you know, this is, for me, being that age, that was old and whatever, you know. So now when I look, when I listen to this, it's no longer whatever. I understand exactly why she said what she was saying, because now it resonates in a different way.
Isn't that interesting how as you grow, there are things that you're resistant to of your family or maybe of your culture or of your traditions.
Yes.
And you're like, nah, it's not for me. I'm young. I'm not interested in that. And you kind of grow into it. You were saying earlier that, you know, the real sort of turning point for you was when your mom, when you had your first child and your mom came to visit and handed over all her recipes. Mm-hmm. And you were suddenly aware that actually, yes, I do want to cook. Yeah. I do want to get in the kitchen. Yeah. And not only was it about the significance of eating good food and eating well as a family, it was about what those recipes brought with them because of the heritage coming from Palestine. Your mom has texted in the show. Good afternoon to you, Iman. She says, I'm so proud of you and of your patriotism towards Palestine. That's from your mother, Iman.
Of course she would send that. I mean, I know she's listening. I know my grandmother is listening as well. And I know that my grandmother has my brother explaining to her what exactly I'm saying, because her English is not exactly very, very strong. So I know right now that there's a lot of people mentioned in this book and a lot of people that this book celebrates that are seeing for the first time, because they really have no idea what I wrote in that book. Seeing for the first time where I've gone with this, and I can't wait to give them their copies, because I mean, in the end, All of this would not have happened had I not had these specific women in my life who wanted to show me that you can have your own space and the way you are and the way you want to live, but keep space always to think of yourself as a collective, not just the person. And I think that this is really one of the most important things that you learn coming of age.
Those celebrations, what kinds of foods would be served?
We love rice, all kinds of grains that are cooked in the fashion of pilafs. But in Palestine, the biggest celebration food is the stuffed whole lamb. So basically, a whole lamb will either be stuffed with rice and meat and then slow cooked and then had. And it actually makes sense because in Palestine, the families are big. And when they're having a celebration, we're talking about a community celebrating together. So you've got to prepare food to feed everybody. To date, even though food changes and we have modern applications and we have this and that, to date, it is the thing served in all the precious occasions. And to date, the same communication continues. Where when I serve this, it means I value you a lot and therefore I've gone all out. The more traditional recipe, which is now almost forgotten, which I also have in the book with instructions, is the whole lamb stuffed with the vine leaves and kusa. And that is just elaborate and it's delicious. It's so mouth-watering. It is amazing. And to me, in the book as well, I present it as a challenge because it is a very challenging recipe and I'd say it is like the epitome of this cuisine.
So how long would it take to cook and what do you cook it in?
So basically you will marinate it overnight for the meat to tenderize. You'll marinate it in yogurt and spices and tomato paste and olive oil, of course. It's used in all of our cooking. And then the next day you'll half cook the wara'inabu kusa, which is the rolled vine leaves and kusa, and then you'll stuff the lamb with it, and then you'll cook that lamb for at least 7 hours on very, very low heat. And then the meat just pulls out of the bone. You know, it's like it melts in your mouth with a whole savory and tangy flavor of the vine leaves and then the kusa and the rice. I'm telling you, this stuff is...
Sounds pretty special to me, for sure. So that's would be a real... That would be a special occasion. It would be a real mark of hosting your guests and showing how special you feel they are to you. And it's still today, as you're saying, what is served.
You can have a very, very modern wedding. You can have it in a hotel like most people do now and have an orchestra fly from Europe to come and play in your wedding, but you'll have that lamb in that orchestra hotel style wedding.
Lovely. And so would you have lots of courses or would it be like a buffet? What else would accompany that kind of dish?
Okay, so normally when you have a whole lamb, because you're saying it is so precious, because it's viewed as a very precious food, normally you don't serve other things next to it. You serve salads. You serve one of the best salads to serve next to this is the yogurt and cucumber salad. Otherwise, you can serve next to it a garden salad. But people like to also do other varieties and include people who might not be in favor of this. But only in very big occasions do you ever serve anything next to the lamb. And then you have the choice of going with the stir fries, which we call alayat, like alayat bandura, for instance, which is basically tomato stir fried with olive oil and garlic and salt and black pepper. Or you can serve a rice dish on the side. You can also serve a stew on the side. But most likely with the lamb specifically, you will serve it as on its own. Msakhan is another celebration food because msakhan is, in a way, because back in the day, people used to prepare the bread and then prepare the actual caramelized onions and the chickens and then put them together. So it was kind of laborious. So they left it for very special occasions. Another one would be ma'lubes are also... although they are more everyday foods, but because people love them so much, it's very often that you will find them on the table. Wara'inabu kusa on its own is my absolute favorite. And it's definitely any laborious food that requires a lot of prep is something that is usually left for special occasions.
Desserts?
We, the Palestinians, believe that the best desserts in the world have originated in Nablus. And Nablus happens to be the city where my husband is from. So
you have great olives there as well.
Yes, 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 you do. In Nablus, even in the whole of Palestine, even back in the day, people used to travel from where they are to Nablus to learn the basics of pastry making. Like one such example is الكنافة النابلسية. الكنافة النابلسية is basically a semolina dessert that celebrates the Nablus specialty cheese that's known as جبنة النابلسية. It actually takes the name of the city. And look, we can have it anywhere and people can be good and my recipe can be good. But you will never have it the way you will when you're in Nablus. You have to try their knafe. And then the knafe has become so popular that nowadays every city almost has one person that will serve you knafe. Like over here in Dubai, there is one that we buy from because he actually uses the Nablusi cheese. Because a lot of other places start using other types of cheeses, including mozzarella, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
But that's not the original. Once you try it the way it is meant and the way it was created in Nablus, you'll see that it's absolutely amazing food.
Questions on the food, on the ingredients, on the recipes, send them through on 4001. And if you're somebody in our community that cares about children and their safety, the protection of children, whether you're working in the profession, whether you're a carer, a teacher, maybe you're a counsellor, something like that, a coach, or indeed, of course, as a parent, then the Austability is happening, the Austability Child Protection Seminars on the 18th of January. We're giving away two tickets, and it's really looking at cyber crime, child protection, gender equality, and also lots of other areas around female empowerment. It's a company from Australia, and it's that's owned by an Australian-owned organisation. So really helping people in the community stay safe. So Austability is the name. It's happening on the 18th of January. It's at Knowledge Village. It's from 4:30 in the afternoon. Getting into the sweet stuff with Chef Dima Sharif with her book, a beautiful book that's here in front of me, Plated Heirlooms. Now check out that we've given you a little sneaky preview because this doesn't go out on the shelves of the UAE for a few more weeks, though you will be able to buy a copy from Dima at the Farmers Market on the Terrace a week on Friday from then. But we've posted up a few pictures to give you a little look at some of the beautiful illustrations, and we need to mention as well the illustrator of the book.
The photographer is Mita K. Wolf, and she's really a brilliant, brilliant food photographer and stylist. I've chosen to work with Mita not just because we're friends and we do projects together throughout the year, but because Mita is able to be sensitive to what her what the objective is and what I require in terms of the pictures reflecting the words and the culture that I'm talking about. And she is not from this culture. This is very foreign to her, and she managed to put it together so beautifully that it was above and beyond anything I ever thought.
Wonderful. It just shows this is a book for everyone, isn't it? It's about being connected and finding that connection through sharing stories of each other's cultures and bringing it together through food.
And I'm happy you say that, because honestly, if I want this book to do anything, and if there is a reason why I wrote this, I wrote it for it to be an inspiration. Because if you change the names and change the names and of the food and the recipes, you'll find it is universal. All of us share the same kind of love and connections and to what is precious to us. And if this is to do what it's meant to do, it's to inspire people to connect with their heritage, with where they come from, and with the people in their lives that really make a difference.
The sweet stuff, Dima.
The sweet stuff, yeah. So the book, in the book, throughout the book, not just in the sweet section, I've included the very traditional recipes. I've also included recipes that are almost forgotten, recipes that people no longer do, or recipes that only grandmothers are doing these days, which I fear will disappear. And also in the sweet section, I've done just that. So basically, I do explore varieties of Palestinian desserts, such as the knafe. I show people how to actually make it, because most people rely on kadaifi pastry, which is not even Palestinian. It's the Greek pastry, very similar to knafe. So I show people how to actually prepare the semolina dough and make the knafe at home. I also go into madlu'a. Madlu'a is funny because it literally means spilt over, because the women would make it in the pots and then spill it over a tray. And then serve it that way back in the day, hence the name. But madlu'a is really a delicious, delicious dessert. I go into atayef, which everybody knows and loves, but I also go into the atayef cake, which is my grandfather's creation. And in fact, the whole of the sweets chapter is a chapter dedicated to my grandparents, because I felt that in a way, it is the sweetest thing, that relationship, because there is so many generations in between, and there's so many years, and you know, but there is so much connection, and you find your true self in their eyes and in the way they deal with you and what they teach you. And I felt that it just belongs in the sweet section. So there's a lot of recipes to explore, including even the cookies that we have with tea, for instance, kak biansoon, ma'ruta, which is cookies that are filled with dates. And I give variations throughout the book to every recipe that I give. Like, for instance, ma'ruta, you can make it with dried figs or even dates. So also I wanted to show people that they can get creative. Yes, this is a menu and it's classic Palestinian cuisine, but then you can build on it. And one of the reasons why I chose the classic Palestinian cuisine is because if we are to think modern and to create a modern cuisine, we've got to first know the classic really, really well, and then work out how we want to make it modern.
Well, good afternoon to Kevin, a friend of the show. And for those regular listeners, you'll know that Kevin joins us quite often. He's always bringing in his beautiful cakes and biscuits and things that have been recipes that have been handed down through his family. And he gets to share those creations with us here on air. So it's always a pleasure to hear from Kevin. And he says, I've been listening to you lovingly talk about your book, Dima. History, the heritage of all your recipes is absolutely fascinating. I'm British, English, but have been really motivated to get my hands on this book when it's released so that I can start creating all those wonderful flavours that you've been describing. And I love the name of your book, which is so descriptive of the content, and wishes you all the very best for the future.
Oh gosh, thank you very much. Such heartfelt words. I'm so happy to hear that, and I really hope that the book stands up to what you expect. I can't wait for you to have it and actually give feedback.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when you tried some of the recipes, let us know, Kevin, and I know he will. So it's really, really great. Thanks so much to Kevin. There are lots of chapters to the book, and when it's looking at the recipes, of course, we've touched on some of those sort of types of foods. I want to come back, as we started at the beginning of the show. Remember, you can download the show in its full, in its entirety, when it's podcast later this afternoon on the Dubai Today page at dubaii1038.com. But we talked about Muna, pantry, and the significance of the pantry. And the pantry, it's about it's about the storage of the food, of course, in the pantry, but it's also about the preparation of food. And again, at the farmers market on the terrace, you sell your pickles. Mm-hmm. It's a big part of the Muna.
Yeah. Pantry is very, very, very important, because pantry meant survival to people, especially at times when really the lack of rain meant no food, or the loads of rain meant no food, you know. So people had to be vigilant in how they stored their food, and to have food around and available. For me, pantry shows love, because pantry shows an appreciation to what the land gives us. And we have no control over any land. We have no control over any environment. This is something that we are privileged to have, and we've got to take care of. And we've got to appreciate. And when the land gives you a lot of produce in a given season, it is only right that we respect that produce and we don't waste it. And when it's good is the best time to preserve it. So even like the book, I'm talking about a time, and I'm talking about a need in that time. But then today we might not need that storage, because food is more available. But if we were to respect food the same way when it's as available, then maybe we can make a difference. Sumune for me is very important. It's the philosophy of this cuisine. It's the philosophy of love. It's the philosophy from which I think every family expresses that love to its members by actually making food available and by passing on these recipes. So I went into a lot of it, like from jamming to pickling to bread making to even laban and cheese, including Nablusi cheese and how to make it at home. I've gone into the artisanal side of Palestinian.
So you can learn how to make some of this cheese at home.
Yes. What I wanted to do here, like I told you, this has never been classified. This has never been mentioned. It is impossible and too ambitious for anyone to think that they can do everything in any one study. This, in the end, this is a study. And I like to think that this is a beginning. And I wanted to give all the whatever's needed for this to actually continue and evolve and develop and be added to and, you know, be treated as a reference. I wanted to produce a book that's a classic and a resource. And I hope that people will see that. And I hope that anyone who's like me, where I was when I first started writing this book, looking for information, trying to find references and cross-references, I hope that now this actually gives them a base. I've also included recipes of offal because, I mean, this is something that we no longer cook. I don't eat a lot of the offal recipes that... that are very famous, but I felt that they have to continue, and while they are such a big part of the culture and the heritage and that people still love them today, they've got to be mentioned. So you'll find everything in this.
And book. That's why it's part of the culture.
Yeah.
Dima Al-Sharif, thank you so much for joining me today and giving us this window, this insight into this beautiful book, Plated Heirlooms. It will be on the shelves of the UAE from February the 1st. You can buy it in advance week on Friday from then at the Farmers Market on the Terrace from you. There from 8 till 1 every Friday there in Business Bay, just in front of Executive Towers. But for now, we've put all the details up on our blog post so you can connect with Dima. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. And, you know, I hope everybody will enjoy this.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody that's been listening and sharing today, all your stories. Thank you so much.